our next story is about someone most of us have never heard of, but who is a big, big deal in experimental music. Pauline Oliveros has been hailed as a visionary and a renegade. She's also taught at some of the most prestigious composition programs in the country, like Mills College in Oakland. David Krasnow has this profile.
Listen. Are you listening in every possible way to everything possible to hear? This is the rudiment of something called deep listening.
Well, deep listening is not a thing, it's a process. And it's to understand that the ears transmit waves and particles to the auditory cortex eventually, and it's there where listening takes place. You can't close your ears, but you can shut off your listening. No matter how much you think you're listening, there's more to be listened to. The frog choruses in Texas in my childhood were astounding. I mean, and there you have amazing sounds, and amazing interlocking patterns of all kinds. The cicadas, all of that.
For Pauline Oliveros, the concept of deep listening encompasses the sounds of the natural world, our technological interventions in it, and the limited realm of well-ordered notes we usually call music. She was among the first Americans to create electronic music, emulating the sounds of creatures with quarter-inch magnetic tape. She helped to develop the first operational synthesizer. She's performed in water cisterns and lava caves. She broke an old taboo on improvisation in classical music, playing alongside countless musicians from different disciplines. In recent years, Oliveros has been embraced by everyone from Lincoln Center to Sonic Youth. Oh, and she plays the accordion. You haven't heard of her?
In spring, when woods are getting really off time, tell you what I mean. In summer, when the days are...
I was 20 when I left Houston. I took my accordion and $300 and went to San Francisco. helped to found the San Francisco Tape Music Center in 1960, along with Ramon Sender and Martin Sabotnik, where we did quite a lot of new work. Sometimes I play a CD of a piece that I made 40 years ago, and there's a lot of surprise at what I was able to do with very limited means. I could generate whole pieces just with oscillators and amplifiers and tape delay.
The first time I heard one of Oliveros' records, I was on the air at my college radio station. I dropped the needle and a dissonant cluster of tones began a long, steady drone. 10 seconds later, the rock DJs burst into the studio saying, "Dude, your CD's skipping."
Especially when you see it live, there's a lot that's happening that's not corresponding to what you're seeing, and so you're trying to have to stretch some to make sense of it.
I asked composer Eric Naumann why Oliveros' music was not as well recognized as that of peers like Terry Riley or John Cage. He found the question sort of unproductive.
I don't know if we can find the answer in talking about accessibility, because I also wonder, you know, how many people actually sit down and listen to John Cage recordings.
I was included in a program at it was called The Eccentrics. And so I was one of the eccentrics. They did a trio of mine, which it was for violoncello and piano. And they have to invent quite a bit in that piece. And I remember the attitude of the pianist being, "Oh, we have to write your music? I've turned the compositional process around so that I'm sharing it. I'm sharing the creative work with performers." And so you can say, "Oh, well, who's the composer?" Well, you know what? I don't care.
Oliveros gave up a full professorship in California and founded the Deep Listening Space in Kingston, New York in 1985. In a storefront near the Hudson River docks, she's presented concerts and art exhibits and gathered around her a younger avant-garde that has championed her music in turn. I ran into Stephen Vitiello installing his sound exhibit at the space.
She kind of gets an instant feeling for people and what they might do and where they might go, and sometimes it's what you were after, and sometimes I get the feeling that she knows where you're going to end up.
Vitiello first encountered Oliveras when they both performed at a church in Germany, souped up with a 64-channel sound system.
And I had known Pauline's music, but never really known it, and I maybe never even liked it necessarily. And I walked into the church, and there was this amazing sound, and I felt like all the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I asked the person, what is going on? And they said, oh, it's just Pauline just, you know, sort of getting warmed up.
My name is Susie Ibarra, and I'm a drummer, percussionist, and composer. I met Pauline in 1996 at Mills College. I was doing a residency, and I came into one of her classes that she was teaching. Particularly that week, they were studying Bay Area women composers. It was very rare for me. It was the first time that I had ever been in a class full of women musicians studying women composers.
Oliveras broke ground when she brought feminist concerns into experimental music. In 1970, 2 years after an unstable activist shot Andy Warhol, Oliveras wrote a piece for her called To Valerie Solanas and Marilyn Monroe in Recognition of Their Desperation. She penned an op-ed for the New York Times with the title, And Don't Call Them Lady Composers.
I wrote that article probably after Morton Feldman introduced me at Max Pollock's house as this famous lady composer from California. And I said, hey, Morton, get off it. I don't really like that title.
Oh, I learned a great deal from Pauline, not just composition. You know, what to expect, what not to expect. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically what not to expect and to be open in the moment about, especially in improvising.
Oliveras teaches music essentially as a spiritual discipline, but it's her commitment to sound itself that sets an example.
Really didn't matter to her if a sound was going to go on for a long time. That sound was going to happen, and you had to pay attention to it for every moment that it happened, and don't worry how long it goes on, rather than thinking about needing to have a certain amount of time and fit things into that space.
I keep jumping out of the bag. You know, people think of me as this electronic composer, or the improviser, or this or that or the other. But why do you have to be, you know, one narrow thing? I don't want to be that. It seems like some kinds of people have to have categories and be able to grab onto that and force people into that way, that terminology or that style or that genre. And I just don't fit. Never have, probably never will.
For Studio 360, I'm David Krasnow.